Welcome to the Chinwag Live podcast. Chinwag is an online community for digital marketing professionals, and Chinwag Live is our regular event series established to cast light on trends across the digital media industries. You can find out more information about Chinwag Live on our website, live.chinwag.com. This podcast was recorded at the inaugural Chinwag Live event, Wobble 2.0, on Tuesday the 6th of February 2007 in London. The event was sponsored by Exchange Team, a growing force in digital recruitment. More details about them can be found on their website at www.exchangeteam.com. That's www.xchangeteam.com. This portion of the podcast features the question and answer session with the panel. Dave Nicholson from Zopa, Matteo Bellucci of Skinkers, Ryan Carson of Carson Systems, Andrew Orlovsky of The Register, and Mike Butcher of Vicosis, who also chaired the session.
Right. This is where you get to have your say, everybody. Are you ready? Including the two young ladies scribbling at the front here. Are you journalists or MBA? Swatting, okay. PhD, maybe. Okay, go, everybody. Where are the mics? There's a lady over here with a mic, and there's a chap over here with a mic, and go. Questions? Anybody for our panel? Does anyone want to jump in? If not, I will ask a question. And you've heard enough from me. Oh, sir, go ahead. Can you say who you are and where you're from before you ask the question so we know which side of the fence you're from?
Hi, my name's Dominic Mason. I've got background in e-learning. When you talk about bubbles, I remember trying to set up a peer-to-peer learning system between schools and local authorities who literally hated each other, costing a government agency £18 million, etc. So we never, ever launched it. Blah, blah, blah. I just want to ask the panel if they think there's a difference between Web 2.0 on a PC, as in a static device, and mobile Web 2.0, or even if we've got to Web 1.0 on mobile.
Mobile 2.0. Do you think we can handle that, chaps? Go ahead. Anybody? Get a mic.
I would say that I think there is a big difference, and that, you know, I mean, who heard about the iPhone launch? I mean, everybody did. But the reason why is because the iPhone is the first truly sexy computer in your hand, and at least I think so. Sorry, I'm a Mac guy. But the point is that, yes, I think it's a huge deal that everything that you think about when you sit in front of your computer at home or at office will soon become a part of your life no matter where you are, and it's a massive, massive change. And I think it's really exciting. It'd be cool to see what happens.
I think it's actually, I agree with Andrew, we're all kind of victims of our own rhetoric, and there was a good quote I read some time ago, we're prisoners of our own metaphors. I think we're all, the thing with the Web 2.0 is all techie driven, there's all these techies that make up all the fuss and create all the hype, and they do not confront themselves with the market, with the reality, which is the end user, that, you know, don't give a toss whether it's a mobile, it's peer-to-peer. How many people here know that Skype uses peer-to-peer technology to improve call quality? Is it important? No. You make good calls on Skype? Yeah, right, cool. You know, what does it use? Who gives a toss? So with mobile, I think it's the same. It's a digital thing. You know, you have a digital life, and I think it's, you know, I think people look at it from just their needs. They don't look at a mobile or a PC or Mac, or they say I need a door into my digital space, and they don't care what it is.
I mean, I think it's all about the applications. So when I look at what you can try on a mobile phone, there's a very limited number of things you actually want to do on a mobile phone. So, you know, my experience of financial services industry is that for the last 5 years, they've been trying to work out how to get you to do financial services on your phone, and no one does it, because actually you don't want to apply for a mortgage when you're on the bus. It's just of no interest to anybody. So I think for the right applications, and I think of things like Google Maps, which I use on my phone all the time, I think it's a fantastic application on a phone.
You may want to lend money to the bus driver.
It's for a fare, maybe. But generally, I mean, there's a pretty limited set of things you want to do on a mobile device right now, and it's limited by the technology, so that set of things will increase, but right now.
Yeah, I'd agree that they're very different, and they're actually going in different directions, and that's a very good thing. As you said, you don't even want to look at eBay when you're on a tiny screen. One thing worth thinking about with mobile is that it's going to have a very different revenue model to clicks, to web advertising. The carriers kind of almost, they won't say this publicly, but they know that data isn't a money earner for them. They spent all this money on the 3G licenses. Where the carriers are going to make their money is on transactional data. Oyster cards should be in phones. I don't see why I have to carry an extra piece of plastic. That's another chip and another radio, near-field radio chip in there. So people looking to exploit technology will have to think much more about people coming into the stores. And again, it's a positive thing. It's driving physical foot traffic.
You've got a question? Oh, sorry. Hold up your arm, if you've got a question. Hold up your question. Helen,
Beat Marketing. I'm a mobile consultant. I just feel compelled to say something about mobile. I use eBay on my mobile all the time, and it's a brilliant application for your mobile.
Helen, you're a mobile marketer.
True enough. Except I'm not a geek, and I'm not a programmer, and I don't actually use my mobile very often. But I do use eBay on my mobile, and the reason it's pertinent is because I'm out a lot of the time, and if I'm watching an auction, I need to know about that auction at the last minute so I can put in my last-minute bid.
So you use Auction Sniper or something like that?
So, I have to watch it if there's something that is really pertinent. I also agree with you about that mobile and digital are diverging, and it won't really change until data charges come down. But at the same time, there needs to be more cross-pollination between the mobile world and the online world for really exciting things to happen. And I'd really like to see more of that happening. Just a comment.
There's a question towards the back there, gentlemen. Could you put your hand up, please, sir? Thank you. And could you say who you are away from?
It's Julian Bond. I'm CTO of Academy. I had a question for Andrew. When you were down in Cannes, did you come across any realistic, sustainable solution for compensating artists for the content they produce, and particularly for the music they produce?
Yeah, and it's a really old one. It's the one we use for radio. It's the one we use for public performances now. You take a pot of money and you divide it up. It can be on your mobile bill. It'll be on your ISP bill, and it's as little as 50 pence a week. It's kind of absurd when people look at it and think about it and think, why have we got people being prosecuted? Why have we got these anti-copyright wars? It's so easy to fix.
But who collects the money and who distributes it?
It can be the same people who do it today, or it can be in the US, the Sound Exchange was created to do it. It's conceptually very simple, pot of money and divide it up. Practically, it's horrendous. You have to study music law for a long time. There's all these collection agencies that are lined up against each other. It's an absolute nightmare. And it's actually asking them to do a lot. It's asking them to walk over a cliff into like the digital world, and it's very hard to ask people to do that. When they realize that they're actually going to be better off than before, maybe we'll shove them along. But that's why it's taking so long, basically.
Excuse my cynicism, but I don't believe a centralized system like that will work.
What makes you say it's centralized? If it works for radio, for...
Let's take it offline. Have a fight later, chaps.
Can I make a comment on this?
Matt.
Yeah? It's an interesting point, and I think I'm seeing with digital rights that actually digital rights could be something that could bring mobile and PC and television actually much closer, because the rights holders, you know, whether it's the guys that own the rights to the FA Cup or it's music rights, they're going to have to, if at the moment they're selling the rights on different platforms, the platforms are blending now, because you can be on a PDA with Wi-Fi. Does that classify as a mobile? What if I buy a mobile phone that has Wi-Fi connection and download a song over Wi-Fi as opposed to downloading over 3G? The point is, I think that the rights should be linked to the individual. If I pay £3 for a song or £1 for a song, it's my song, and it should be platform agnostic. And I've speaking to some of the rights holders, they are going in that direction, because they think that it's not their job to say whether something is mobile or PC or IPTV. Is they say, I own the rights for this song, you want to buy it, you're Mr. John Doe, give me £1. And use it on any platform you like. And that's probably going to accelerate things for the merging of the platforms.
Any more questions? Let's talk about whether or not there is a kind of a new movement, whether this is new, what is happening now, or whether it's just old stuff repackaged. Go ahead.
Justin Cook, Fortune Cookie. I kind of agree with Mike about the whole Groundhog Day sort of theory. I mean, much of this stuff has kind of existed for many, many years. It's just we're sort of giving it a new spin. But I'm afraid I was going to ask my question before you sort of said, oh, ask something about new, Mike. So I'm going to kind of ask something else, if that's all right. Sorry about that. It's more about kind of brands, really. And, I mean, you guys up there on the stage, you know, you're all, and a lot of respect to you, you know, you're all relatively young, new brands. But one thing I wanted to ask you about was Web 2.0 and brands, and you know how kind of brands are kind of embracing or are scared of Web 2.0. I mean, we work with a few brands, and some of them are kind of dipping their toes in the water a little bit right now with it. And I don't want this to be kind of a buzzwordy type sort of question, but it would be really interesting to kind of get the panel's opinion on that.
When you say brands, do you mean social media, that kind of thing?
I'm talking about kind of, you know, brands that have existed for, you know, 50, 60, 100 years and how they can kind of, utilize kind of a Web 2, work with Web 2, et cetera.
I'd like to speak to that. I think that if you want to epitomize Web 2.0, I would say it's about transparency and honesty. And as a small company, I've got nothing to lose to be transparent. Who gives a crap? I can share our revenue. I can talk about what works and what doesn't, and I feel completely comfortable with doing that because we're not a public company, and I don't have investors to worry about or anything like that. And I think that's very powerful because everybody just wants to hear the truth. You know, as a consumer, I just don't want to hear any bullshit anymore. You know, from marketing people or anything like that. I just want to know the truth, what works and what doesn't. And so I think a lot of people who are building web apps and services today are just giving people what they want. No more bullshit, no more trying to sell a product that people don't actually want. It's more a matter of saying, yeah, so you want to check eBay while on your mobile? Well, we'll make that possible. You know, because it's what you want. You don't want to apply for a mortgage because no one wants to do that. You know, we built a product because people just want to send large files. That's, you know, they just want to do it. We want to enable that. I think big brands are going to, I think they're going to be damaged if they can't keep up with that.
Let me just call you on that, Ryan. A lot of the hype about Web 2 is people building applications which are effectively features, but they're not actually businesses. So they're kind of, you know, a nice to have, or it's something that's nice in my browser, or it tells me about, gives me an update about something. But they're not actually businesses in their own right. Or maybe they're looking for a business to buy them as a feature and incorporate them. But, I mean, what do you think?
I think it's important for people to have a business plan from the beginning. And so if you don't have a plan to be profitable, I mean, we talked about that. You know, Zopa has a plan to be profitable. You know, Dropsen had a plan to be profitable. I think it's important. It's just bad business to launch a feature and have no idea if it's going to work financially.
Go ahead, sir. Can you say who you are?
Alan Patrick. I co-founded a consultancy, so we're one of the people feeding off the Web 2.0 thing. I've got a comment and a question. The one comment I'd make is on the last question. What we're noticing compared to all the pitches we did a year ago about Web 2.0 to the big brands, and they told us to go away, what's happening now is a lot of the websites that do Web 2.0 stuff are beginning to overtake the traditional ones in terms of reach and all that stuff. So there's definitely been a shift in 12 months. And my comment was more to Andrew, which is, He said the Web 2.0 doesn't solve problems, and I wasn't quite sure whether the problems it didn't solve were the sort of existential, why are we here, or whether they're more specific, you know, what is Web 3 or whatever it is going to do. I just wondered if you wanted to expand on that a bit so I could
I think
write
it's the
it down and consult on it, you know.
Yeah.
free advice.
people just expect too much from technology. I think the internet has real problems with it, with spam. Any open system gets prone to entropy, and the Web 2.0 people are very slowly discovering that. We can talk about trust or demanding transparency, but there's a much bigger problem, which is that are the people who are commenting on your site representative of your true audience, because or your true market or your true customers? A lot of the time they're not, because the people who are using the internet at the moment are a very small, unrepresentative subsection of the population. And marketers have already kind of looked at the blogosphere and gone, right, okay, this is like supremely, almost telepathic focus group we've got out there for free, and they've launched something, and it's a disaster, because they've forgotten that this is a really small, self-selecting, white group of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the issues we've had with Zopa. So just talking about the discussion board earlier, one of the things we always have to keep in the back of our mind is, actually, those are the real hardcore nutters, and they represent a very small percentage of our user base. So one of the things that myself and Justin, who's our UI designer here, we always end up rowing about is, you know, how much we should design for the hardcore and how much to design for the mass. And you have to balance the two very carefully. It's difficult.
Gentlemen at the back.
Hi there. Charles Astwood, founder of London Eaton. I just wanted to ask the panel, basically, what you felt is more important. Existing revenue streams on sites or the potential of users from sites. Obviously, you've got the 2.0 thing with people putting a lot of emphasis, as they probably did in the kind of bust times of 2000 on many, many users using it, but no existing revenue streams, and whether that was more important at the moment than actual businesses earning money as when it comes to terms to selling.
A real .com question. Is there any money in any of this?
I'll try to give my view. There are two very different business models, and I think here... The good thing about the post-bubble is that people have learned a few things. One is that you should look at the cash first. So revenue is king always, and much more than used to be. Having said that, there are some good examples where no revenue, lots of users have been gobbled up by somebody who paid a lot of money for it. But that's, I think, is more the exception to the rule. So if you're building a business today, you should just focus on the revenue. And if you end up having a very large user base, and the opportunity comes around, great, but it's very hard to build a business model around that, I think, because it's extremely risky. Unless you create something that doesn't cost you anything to do, you just get it out there, it costs you £30,000, you set it up, and by miracle it flies, great. But to invest on getting people to join a proposition, I think, is you even need the money, but then it just doesn't work out anymore.
I just wanted to go back to the point about the brands. I think it's very interesting that the three businesses and the register, even if they won't admit it, are honest and measurable. And I think the message that the brands are getting from a lot of their traditional agencies is, yeah, stick with posters. Posters are great. Posters are brilliant because the agency can get $2.7 million for going to South Africa, taking a photo of a car, sticking on a poster. Is it successful? Who knows? I'm just interested to see if there's any sort of... whether you've been at loggerheads with traditional agencies and what's your experience there, especially the skinkers.
Yeah, okay. Direct question. If I can use an analogy, I think if the internet was a person, I think it's like a 13-year-old teenage who thinks he's worked everything out about the universe and their future life, but they haven't got a clue yet. And I think that's where we're at right now. We're still, you know, there's a lot of companies that think they've got it all worked out and they can spend $2.5 billion to buy somebody because it's going to be worth that. I think we're still very early in the internet, which means that from a big brand point of view, it would be very silly to throw away 70 years of proven marketing for the new kid on the block. What's happening is that they are warming up to it. They're doing it their own way, which is putting money into it slowly but surely. You know, we're reading how much, you know, the budget, yearly budget of the P&G and Coca-Cola of this world is going into digital. So you can't negate that they are doing it. But they're doing it in a very pragmatical way. And, you know, maybe posters, the cost of posters will go down, but I think they're still cool and, you know, they still do the job. And I think they will be doing that for a long time. So I think it's just happening very slowly. It's going to be a natural transition. So there's no earthquake around the corner, I think.
Questions, anybody? Keep them coming. Put your hand in the air. We'll have one just... But there's the managing director of Chinwag. Sorry, I'm going to ignore him. We'll have him first, and then we'll go for Sam.
Do this one. My name's Andy Martin. I'm a freelancer. I guess the question I had is about the startups you're seeing, and I followed sort of Brian's blog, all the various blogs you've been doing about NewsSender, and that's been really interesting. I guess the question I have across the group is, to what extent do you see these startups actually addressing market needs? Because if I think about Zopa, which I think is a fascinating business, you're launching in the consumer credit market, which is just like the world's most cutthroat market, both for being a fascinating platform, but it's a nasty market. You're going into eBay was like, there's nowhere to sell your crap, whereas you know there are plenty of places to get personal loans. So it's almost, how does that thinking build into this sort of startups you're seeing? So I guess that's a specific question for Zopa, but then a general question for the other guys.
Shall I go first? I think it's an interesting point. I mean, the UK unsecured lending market is really competitive now. That's great if you're sort of a classic good quality credit risk. What Zopa was set up to try and do was not just cater for those people who you can get a loan from any bank or any online lending facility. What we wanted to set up to do was to try and create a more human way of credit assessing people, so to be able to take into account things that most banks don't. So, you know, as a freelancer yourself, you're probably aware that it's probably quite hard for you to take an unsecured loan, or certainly the banks will look at you differently from if you'd been working for British Telecom for 10 years. And what we wanted to do, one of the reasons for setting up Zopa was to address the needs of that new group of consumers, because we think there's a growing number of people out there that actually the banks and the credit scoring, you know, companies just don't address very well. So yes, on one hand, you could say there's an existing market that's very competitive, and that's true, but also we think there's a gap in the market there for people that they just don't reach right now.
Does anyone else want to have a go at that?
Quick comment. I think that consumer propositions, what the internet, I mean, if you believe in the long tail, I believe parts of the long tail idea, the long tail has created a new opportunity. So, like if you read the article on the long tail, the description says there's a tidal thing has gone out and now you have all this new land there. There's definitely a new market that has been created by the internet, and there are consumer propositions for that market, which are the Zopa, the eBay. There are consumer positions on the traditional market. In terms of all the startups, what they're focusing on, I think that unfortunately, and that's where there is a bit of a bubble, there's few consumer propositions of value in the traditional space. Most of the things are kind of self-fulfilling prophecies of, you know, solving problems that are not there, as Andrew was saying, I think. I see more interesting things happening in the new space, sort of on the long tail, because it's a bit more land grabbing going on there at the moment.
Yeah, one just very quick example of something that's an innovation. It's not really web related, but once you hear of it, it's like, "Dull, why didn't anyone do this before?" Which is Orb and Sling Media. You're at somebody's house, you're in a pub. Can you show them your photographs that you've got on your home PC, on your phone? You can't until now. Can you access your playlists on your home PC at work or on your phone when you're on the bus? You can't, but you can until now. X Series 3 has just launched a plan where you can do that for £10 a month. I didn't see anybody kind of predicting this, but once it's there, it's such an obvious thing to do. So when we get down to basics and look at what people really want, there's lots of space for doing that.
Just to speak to that question myself also, certainly at Vicosys.com, when we're seeing some of the startups who send us pitches about, you know, write about us, tell us, you know, review our site, tell us what you think, etc. There's one thing that I think is an interesting thing is that the sort of the engine of social media is starting to run dry just a little bit, especially when I see another startup telling me that people can socially network around place and when they're going on their gap year and have a kind of a MySpace style page and with a blog and upload videos and stuff like that. That's definitely the engine is running down, and it might have a very nice Ajax interface, as Andrew was saying. Interface does look lovely, and you know all these new permutations of design online do look great, and they do look completely different, actually, and often than the old-fashioned Web 1.0 world. But what's underneath, and I think that's where we've got to get to. So we get some more questions. I'm going to go throw to Sam here first. You had a question, right? And then there's a gentleman there. And then any other questions that I can look for? Keep going, Sam, and I put your hand up, and I'll come to you in a minute. Go ahead, Sam.
Sam Michel from Chinwag. Excuse the croaky voice. That's why I'm not chairing tonight, and Mike's digging. fantastic job. I suppose my question, I wanted to be the voice of doom. And just I hear Web 2.0 used as buzzword bingo by digital media agencies to potentially pitch their clients and befuddle them with weird community things and why they should build their version of MySpace for their favorite washing powder or equivalent. Is there anything new, or is it just the same old things that, as Andrew points out, are not even solving technological problems? Or is there something fundamentally different about what we... I still clench slightly at using the term of Web 2.0, but all the things that we put under the Web 2.0 banner?
The main thing that we need to remember is that everybody that's building these kind of applications are businesses, and they have to be financially viable. And I can't remember who said it. Yeah, you can build something and hope it works if it costs you nothing. Great. But because everything needs to be profitable, I would say that it's all about cash and revenue. And you have to, whenever, and this kind of speaks to your question, if you have an idea, you have to open Excel and do a cash flow model and see if you're going to be profitable. And don't even think about spending any money until you know that at least it's likely to happen. And I think there's a lot of mistakes being made right now where there's a lot of VC money going around, and there's probably investors in this room, and a lot of it's being wasted because even to spend $1 million on an application means that you have to be able to get $1 million out. And if you look at Excel and you plan your revenue model and you look at it, you know, like I said, DropSend brings in about $140,000 a year. We're at the moment trying to sell it for $1 million. And we don't have any buyers yet. Well, why is that? If there's money being spent by VCs in the $5 million to $10 million range, and we have actual revenue, what's wrong? And I would say that you've got to open Excel and make sure it'll be profitable, and then you're cool. And if you're not, take a step back.
Okay, we're in the final questions round here now. So there was a gentleman there who's held his hand up for quite a long time, just there, that way. And then, and then, go. Say who you are, where you're from.
Yeah, hi, Stefan Chilter, pad.com. I mean, Mike, with all due respect, but the people who were hyping Ajax and the rounded corner sites and all that stuff, it was guys like TechCrunch, as far as I remember. You
absolutely, and I hate them.
Also, for the gentleman with the hat,
bastards.
Name, I'm terrible at name as well, but you said with the blogosphere, we have this whole market, you know, ready for us to contact and so on. But from what I've seen with TheraPad is it's always the same 65,000 people, the same early adopters. The mainstream, it's still very hard for me as a company that does blogging and all that sort of stuff to actually reach them, unless I have millions of dollars in venture capital, which I don't. So. Yeah, I mean, that's all I wanted to say.
Just bitterness.
Yeah, bitterness.
That's good. All right. Bitterness is good. Let's all have a bitch session. Okay. Now, go ahead, sir. I think this is going to be almost the final question unless anybody else wants to pitch in. So you go ahead, sir, and I assume that there aren't going to be any further questions.
Okay. Thanks. Steve Clayton from Microsoft. It was good to hear the Skinker story, sir.
Oh, the man from Microsoft.
Well, I like the Raiders and the Lost Ark thing.
This is a lovely end.
It's a picturesque end, isn't it? But
how about Vista?
It's a beautiful operating system. I'm delighted to see that Ryan's a Mac guy that still uses Excel on the Mac, though. That's good to hear. So, in the kind of the fuel in many ways for Web 2.0 appears to be the advertising business model. And a few of you have talked about community, and it seems that a lot of people are just interested in build a community, get people to come, and then sell some ads, and that's the business model. And it's quite refreshing to hear that, you know, a couple of the guys here on the panel, that isn't your business model. But I guess I'm interested, certainly from your point of view, Andrew, from the West Coast, how sustainable is that as a business model over the long term, or is that something that we should even care about?
I think we need an Excel sheet here to do some calculations.
Well, I gather that for every, I don't know if this is directly relevant, for every pound that's been spent on print, only one-third goes back into online advertising. many of you will probably have better statistics than that, but online businesses will be much smaller. We're very fortunate. I mean, we've got 35 staff now, but we had eyeballs very early on. We didn't take VC money, and we were kind of living on our means well before the bubble burst last time. I'm very pessimistic about a lot of these opportunities. That's why I think transaction-based business models will be ones where it's real money. It's you know, there's no intermediary. There's no, it's just money.
I think that it is sustainable, definitely, because, I mean, Microsoft wouldn't be launching AdCenter if you guys didn't think so, and also Yahoo wouldn't be launching Panama. The ability to accurately track whether or not your ads are working is amazing, and as a small company, we use AdWords because of that fact, and, you know, we'll probably try AdCenter and Panama. The ability to advertise and know whether or not it's working is amazing. You know, like I said, we put an ad in Creative Review. I don't know if it worked. I don't think it worked because it was a print ad, and, you know, and so yeah, I think it's very sustainable, and hopefully it'll continue.
Well, nobody's mentioned click fraud, and if you, I gather there's somebody from Yahoo here. The problem with both Google and Yahoo is, and they both share this problem, they run closed auction systems. To me, that's something that Wall Street quite rationally finds isn't very comfortable with. Wall Street and the financial markets are all about kind of risk management. When you've got companies that basically are the set the terms of the entire auction, basically control this entire market that guys like you depend on, I'd get nervous.
I think just one last comment on that. I think there is one underlying variable that never changes, which is the amount of time we'll have. And that's not going to change soon. And then I think people will go where the eyeballs are, because if you need to get people's attention, you're going to have to go where the people are. So people are definitely going into the digital channel, so the advertiser will chase them. And whether people will be able to create models like the standard television model, where you get free service, basically all advertising funded, Channel 4 and ITV, there will be examples of that. I'm not sure if that's going to be the norm, though.
Right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to wrap it now. I'm off to have Ajax inserted digitally into my DNA, but... So I have an appointment now, which I have to rush off to. So we're going to wrap it up, and I'm going to say thank you to our panel, who was Dave Nicholson, inventor and co-founder of Zopa, Matteo Vellucci, who is CEO of Skinkers, Ryan Carson, co-director of Carson Systems, Andrew Olowski from theregister.com, .co.uk, the media site, and my name is Mike Butcher from vcosis.com, and mbytes.com is my personal blog, but I don't update it that much, you know. What can I say? Google AdSense is just shit, isn't it? And lastly, I just want to say thank you very much for indulging me earlier with my speech. I will never ever reminisce again about the dot-com bubble, and that's a promise. No, actually, I'm lying. Thank you very much, everybody. Please enjoy the drinks and chat. Goodbye.
This podcast was recorded in front of a live audience. To find out about future Chinwag Live events, why not subscribe to our free newsletter at live.chinwag.com. Chinwag Live Wobble 2.0 featured Dave Nicholson, Ryan Carson, Matteo Bellucci, Andrew Olofsky, and Mike Butcher. Audience microphones were wrangled by Kim Ng and Patrick Kamara-Ropita. Door enforcement was provided by Thayer Driver Security of Dartford. Sponsorship was handled by Hugh Evans and Thayer Driver. The commissioning editor was Sam Michel. Chinwag Live was produced by Deirdre Malloy.